A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
Let's review the week in international news with Sindhu Stalby, leadership coach and entrepreneur. She's originally from Bangalore in India, based here in Singapore. Good to see you, Sindhu.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Yes, I know you're a veteran of radio, so I know it's good for you to be back in this environment here in the studio. And we're going to start with your homeland of India, and actually a good news story from a natural disaster. We don't always see that. India is hailed as a success, the evacuation of more than a million people to safety to avoid Cyclone Fani, and 16 people were killed in the northeastern Indian state of Orissa by the storm, which hit there on Friday. But the loss of life could be much worse, couldn't it?
That's right. In fact, if you know, Odisha is a very, very vulnerable part of India, and it's hit by cyclones, droughts, severe heat waves. It's a really tricky place. But this year, and for this cyclone particularly, the disaster management has been incredible. And even the forecasting and the action has been quite quick. Like you said, evacuating more than a million people within 24 hours. So it's quite amazing.
Yeah. And India isn't really known for this compared to like Western countries for, you know, evacuations. And we've seen how flimsy a lot of the buildings are. And so where do they go? Where did they get evacuated to?
So they did create sheds and shelters. They had a lot of external help as well. Mm. But the quick action, like you said, is unprecedented in a way. And even moving that many people, anticipating the kind of action they need, is quite incredible. As an Indian, I'm quite proud of them.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we also have the elections ongoing, don't we, in India? And particularly recently, wasn't it?
It was a week ago, yeah. Mm-hmm. What really would be now the challenge and for us to see is how do they now bounce back? How do they create a more sustainable environment for this vulnerable place?
Yeah, and Bangladesh was supposed to be hit, but it seems like Bangladesh has been spared because that's not too far away, is it, from Orissa?
No, it isn't. And very happy to see that it's moved, it's receded, it's crossing Meghalaya over. The strength is much less, so really happy about that.
Okay, let's look elsewhere within Asia. I mean, Thailand's king Maha Vajiralongkorn has been officially crowned during elaborate rituals, which started on Saturday, lasting 3 days. Thailand's first coronation in 69 years. He was dressed in a white gold-trimmed one-shoulder robe. The monarch on Saturday morning sat in a pavilion in the Grand Palace while Thailand's Supreme Patriarch, the most senior Buddhist monk in the country, poured water down his back and on his hands. I mean, it's just incredible, the ceremonies and everything behind this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful and scary at the same time.
Mm. Right? And we're wondering, too, about Thailand with the elections, of course. So we had the elections recently, and we're waiting for the official results, aren't we?
That's
so we've got
right.
this in the background of it, haven't we?
Yeah, that's right. And it's also the whole coming together of old traditions that is important to them and the new challenges of this century. So it'll be interesting for us to see how they hold both these polarities or what seems like polarities together. And for him as a new king, how does he bring in that stabilizing impact with both of these existing and coexisting right now?
Yeah, yeah. And we often travel, of course, to Thailand and, you know, the coup happening a few years ago, and everything seems to be running as normal, doesn't it? Even with the military government in charge, effectively.
That's right. Yeah. And there is a lot of power with the military in Thailand, and that's something we cannot ignore. But we also know the king has a favorable view from the military right now. So we have to see how he manages the politics, which is even beyond politics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things to balance. And we also mentioned over the last few days, Japan's Emperor Naruhito pledged to fulfill his role as a symbol of state and unity in his first public address since taking the throne. The 59-year-old was speaking as he officially began his reign last Wednesday in a short but symbolic ceremony at the Imperial Palace. And he succeeds his father, 85-year-old Akihito, who abdicated, citing his age and failing health. So he's the first Japanese emperor to stand down in more than 200 years. Another landmark. We have this thing in Thailand with, you know, 7 decades almost since the last coronation. And then we have the emperor, you know, abdicating, first one standing down in 200 years.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me? This reminds me of Pope Benedict after about 600 years because of the same reasons, failing health, approaching old age. He stepped down, which gave way for newer voice to come in. Progress not as fast as we'd like, but definitely an opportunity for the new to come in. And like you said, it's a time of unity from time of peace. They've moved into a time of harmony and unity. Now, it'll be very interesting to see how they come in and bring in that unity again between tradition and the challenges that exist right now. And also, between everything that's happening around him, how does he really bring in the harmony into that?
This is our International News Week in Review with Sindhu Staub. She's a leadership coach and entrepreneur based here in Singapore. You talk about harmony and unity. I'm not sure about so much harmony in North Korea at the moment. What do you think? Because Donald Trump's giving his spin. He's brushed off news of a possible weapons test by North Korea, saying that leader Kim Jong-un will do nothing to interfere and that a denuclearization deal with the U.S. will happen. But this has happened, just about, less than three months since that disastrous, summit they had together in Vietnam. And Kim Jong-un has vented a bit, hasn't he, publicly about how frustrated he is. He doesn't think that the U.S. is doing enough.
That's right. See, every action will have some sort of repercussions. And Trump walking out from that summit is going to have some sort of ripple effect as well. Mm-hmm. And like we've been talking about somebody abdicating power or getting into power, gaining power, this is also a power politics here.
Yeah.
So clearly Kim would want to make his voice heard and would want to get that attention that he thinks he deserves at this point, rightfully or not so rightfully, but he deserves that in his opinion. And he's going to keep trying to do things to get that attention. And this could be one of it. Whether he's crossing boundaries, crossing what commitments he made, we don't know. We have very little information at this point about the kind of tests he's been doing.
Yeah.
What would be great is if they can actually open out more dialoguing between South and North Korea, get support from the U.S., give some and not just take.
Yeah.
And then see how that goes.
And there's a lot at stake for President Donald Trump because, he's basically prematurely said, oh, it's all fixed. It's completely fixed. I fixed it. It's all solved. No problem with North Korea. Let's move on. But we've seen that happen many times before with previous U.S. leaders dating back more than 20 years, right?
Yeah, but with Trump, this seems to be like the signature of his presidency in some way, prematurely stating that he's solved problems which continue to brew, probably creating more destruction than he can anticipate in the future, including the leadership issues that we have right now, which is a brew in some way.
Yeah, of course, it's going to be here before we know it, the 2020 election. But something that could influence that was the release of the Mueller report. And the way that the Attorney General of the U.S., William Barr, has been spinning.
Yes.
And he's the Attorney General. He's not the personal lawyer of Donald Trump. But what he's been saying, Sindhu, it just seems that he's saying something different to what's in the report. And even, Robert Mueller, the war hero, the special investigator, special prosecutor, if you like, sent him a letter saying, hey, listen, you are not characterizing what the report said.
Yeah.
So what does this mean? And Democrats are saying they're outraged we saw last week William Barr appearing before the House, before the Senate, and then he refused to appear before the House because he was a bit worried about the structure of the way things might go. How's history going to remember William Barr, do you think?
Wow.
I mean, is he going to...
Should we remember?
Yeah, he is... He's not a popular man amongst many lawmakers at the moment in the U.S.
Right. So it's ethical, and it's also at a human level, it's a complete break of trust that we place in political structures and processes. Now, the only good thing that can come from this is passive participation in politics is a thing of the past. People want to more actively come in and play a role. Now, how will history remember about what's going to be the ripple effect of it? Clearly, there's going to be a lot of noise. There's going to be a lot of democratic action from this. But we know also from the past, these could become distractions for the Democratic Party when they're going into elections as well. So they also have a choice in a way to make, saying, do I really need to put all my energy here and chase this down to the last atom? Or should I really conserve my energy, put it on the right place, make policies, push things through and show what we can really create for the future rather than get into this whirlpool of deceit, lies, trying to prove them wrong. And like Albert Einstein says, if you do the same thing and expect a different result, you're probably going to be called stupid.
With Sindhu Staub, leadership coach and entrepreneur with our International News Week in Review. I wonder, if impeachment hearings will take place, because a lot of people are saying that you know, Donald Trump's done enough to warrant this kind of investigation. But we know that with, of course, Congress having this very strong Republican representation, it's going to be difficult, isn't it, for them to really take effective action against Donald Trump if he is found guilty of impeachment.
It is. And from what we're seeing in the last few years, they've been trying this. And by some strange way, the Republican Party have been moving through it without really getting much of impact from it.
Mm.
Now, there are two choices, whether to do it right now or to do it later. And do we really need to focus on the elections and what we need to put together for that and then go after Trump or anybody else?
Any alleged crimes or whatever.
Any alleged crimes.
You can obviously prosecute him after he leaves office, but the main thing, I guess, from the Democratic perspective is to win the election and not be distracted by hearings and this and that, right?
Yeah, because there is a finite amount of energy that's available, finite amount of resources that's available. Where would they really want to put it at this point in time? That's a question they'll probably need to sit down and strategically come up with an answer.
And former Vice President Joe Biden has announced that he'll be running, you know, a week or two back. And it seems that Donald Trump is most concerned about him, the 76-year-old who has run unsuccessfully twice before for president. Would the Democratic Party be foolish to be backing Joe Biden, do you think? Or is he going to be a good middle ground, safe option for them because of his experience and because he's got the centrist view? He's not the mad left wing, as some people characterize it.
Again, what will work in their favor is that he has experience. He has been there. He's done that. He has a certain amount of credibility that he already brings to the table.
He's likable?
He's likable as well. And he comes across as an honest person wanting to create positive change. Now, do you want to place your bet there? Or who are your voters really? What do they want? And is it a new voice like Pete, Mayor Pete, who's standing for elections?
Yeah. Who's gay and in his 30s, openly gay.
Who's new voice, who seems to be bringing in the energy of change.
But surely he can't get elected, you know, with his sexual preferences, you know, whatever you might say about it. America, we know, is extremely conservative and puritanical in many parts of the country.
That's right. Or even a Kamala Harris, who seems to have the experience, who seems to be able to hold slightly more open views than the Republican Party. Who do they really want to, what do they want to give to their voters? What do they want for America? That's something they'll really need to think about before just placing a bet on one candidate. And they have so many to choose from.
Yeah.
What do we have, 17 candidates?
I think even more. I think it could even be 20. But history is against Joe Biden, isn't it? Because vice presidents traditionally have not done well. I know that George H. Bush did get elected and there have been other ones as well, but his age and the fact that he's a vice president, he's failed before, it's not in his favor, is it? Because the Bill Clinton and Barack Obama type of under 50 years old are the ones that have generally got elected.
That's right. It doesn't, if you were to go purely by the statistics, historic data and statistics we have, maybe not. But he's got some great running mates. We really don't know. We're desperate for change, if you really look at it, from what we have right now.
Yeah.
And in that desperation, what choices would we really make is something so difficult to predict.
But saying that, you got the best jobs situation since 1969 in the U.S. The economy's booming, so maybe people will just stick with the status quo, however eccentric that may be.
Well, personally, I hope that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, we're looking at it right now and saying this is the number. But is it because of what happened in the last 3 years or is it because of something that was set in motion much before?
Yeah.
We haven't really analyzed that. We're not looking at it as a whole trajectory, but we're just looking at it in this point in time. So it's hard to say how people would look at it. I'm really hoping it won't be status quo.
Well, it's going to be fascinating, isn't it? And we didn't predict that the 2016 would happen the way it did. And I'm sure 2020 is going to have many twists and turns. Like this, thank Sindhu Staub, leadership coach and entrepreneur. Do connect with her on LinkedIn. She has been giving us the International News Week in Review. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.